Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Kvosvik.
Hey, James, you know, we just finished an episode answering a question that I got the other day about, you know, looking ahead. You know, one thing, it's a set of discussions that Carl Carlson and I have been having, and we've gotten a couple of questions related to, how do I add value? And it's related to, in this particular case, it was a question I got. It was about creating a reliability plan and how do I pick the right tools? And it was kind of a longer question, but it was, you know, do I always do FMEA and HALT? And do I always do this, this, and this? And you guys keep talking, and the question was, I mean, you often talk about that you have to select the right tools for the local circumstance. And so we kind of, we often use FMEA because it is a great tool, yet it's not, it has to add value. And part of this, the last episode we did was on, you know, looking ahead from professional development point of view and for how do you move the organization forward with its reliability program. Is the realization is becoming more and more clear to me is that a lot of what we do as reliability engineers is influence decisions, right? So, and so one of my questions for you, James, and is this is as much of anything as out of my own curiosity is, well, what are the types of questions that a reliability engineer in a plant would typically get?
Why is this thing failing? Why did it fail again?
Why is it not running?
Yeah.
How soon before it runs again? Yeah.
Pretty much. It's exactly. Why did it fail? This failed last week. I thought you fixed it. Mm-hmm. What can we do to stop this thing from failing? That's generally what we hear. But I think they're valid questions. They're things that should be addressed. But I also think that, you know, some of the other questions that I would like to hear more of at the same time is, how can we modify this design, or how do we design this so we don't have those failures?
There you occur? Go. That's my world. I can help you with that.
So that's what I want more of, because in the plant, for the most part, it's always very reactive, right? We're doing FMEAs after it's already installed on the plant floor, and our opportunity for making design changes that's going to reduce maintenance costs by a huge amount is gone. Right.
Yeah. No, I had the experience. I went to Paris. I was getting a project through Ops a la Carte, and Mike called me and says, "Hey, we got a project coming in. How would you like to go to Paris?" I'm like, "What? Yeah, that'd be great." And he goes, "Well, I have to tell you, it's in Texas, Paris, Texas. There's a great big facility there. And it's a cool little town. There's no doubt about it, but it's it's 2.5 hours from the nearest airport." It's in the middle of nowhere, and Texas has got a lot of nowhere, it was to do an FMEA on a new bottling piece of equipment. And part of it was input into the design. These guys were way ahead of the curve, and it was great. So it can happen.
That is fantastic.
It can happen.
No, I know it can happen. It just, that's not enough people are asking that question.
That's right. Yeah. So it's, how do we design it so that it works? And the other one thought I had is, well, you know, why don't I have the right spare part? You know, so it goes under the planning, scheduling, kitting, stores, all that stuff gets into it. What I don't hear in my experience in facilities is, are we getting the right, are we dealing with the right vendors for our materials? I heard that from the technicians. I didn't hear it from everybody else.
I agree. That is another major, major important thing. And then it's not just price-based. There's a lot more that goes into selecting the right vendors other than just cost.
Yeah. And I find that sometimes this vendor selection is who provides you the best lunch. And it's like, no, not really the criteria here, guys.
Yep, exactly. There's a whole lot that goes into it.
Now, part of it is, you know, and we mentioned it in our last episode too, is around the culture piece of it. You know, you and I would go into an organization and go, all right, you're just reactive, as if that's a bad thing, right? And say, why is this not more proactively run? And we're looking at the soft stuff around the culture and management priorities and how they behave when the line's down, or what are the activities they do to prevent downtime from occurring, those kinds of things. That's a bigger question that I would imagine. And that's similar to the product development world is, well, how do we get to a place where we're preventing failures? Those kind of questions. Another realm of this is also when you see a lot in the trade magazines lately is around Internet of Thing. And lately I'm seeing a whole bunch about a digital twin, which I don't really understand other than it's a model of your system. And then you can experiment on that and then see if it works. But it's the larger picture around culture and approach and the effects of did this work? If we have a new vibration sensing equipment, does it actually help? How do we know? Those kinds of questions. I think we get involved with some of those on occasion.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I said, they're all good questions, but sometimes the answer isn't just here it is, right? There's right. a lot of work that needs to be done to come up with what is the right answer. And I think that goes back to what you're asking about, you know, how do we influence, what tools do we use, those types of things. And I think that's important is once we understand what the question is, what the problem is, it might not be a simple answer. It might be, you know what, this is occurring. We got these three or four contributing factors. Which one do you want to address first? Or how do we select which one to address first? You know, ease of implementation versus return or cost, right? Those types of things are going to be very important in selecting which approach we're going to take.
Well, let's bring it more specific. Let's say, you know, your manager just came back from a conference and said, well, I got this vibration sensor set of literature, and I've got this thermal camera, you know, a FLIR camera thing that we can use, or I've got an oil analysis, you know, set up here we could go after, but I only can invest in one of those things. And if the question, if you're lucky enough, your boss says, well, which one of these would actually be best, you know, more useful for the organization? And that would be cool. I'd love that kind of assignment because then I get to go play with all three of them for a little bit and think it through. Right. But as opposed to your boss coming back and saying, hey, I just got this, you know, free sample of this new widget thing here. Go make it work, you know, make it useful. And it might be completely off base for what we're trying to do or not relevant for our organization at all, where the needs are.
Yep.
So the hard part I find is that some questions that we receive are the shiny object thing. You know, I've had a boss a couple of times that they just like, oh, this looks cool. Let's try that. Well, and 6 weeks later, oh, that doesn't seem to be working. Let's try this. And it never really let the initial idea actually generate anything or even try one way or the other.
That's the problem is we're busy chasing shiny objects instead of implementing something and following it through. A lot of organizations jump from item to item instead of properly following through, making sure things are working, that type of thing. And in my personal opinion, if organizations just left things alone and followed through one or two initiatives, they'd be way ahead of where they would be if they jumped from shiny object to shiny object.
And it has lots and lots of ramifications, but if you're in a shiny object chasing kind of scenario where I was working in that factory years and years ago, it was the flavor of the month, you know, the program of the month kind of thing. And it was almost monthly. It wasn't quite that quick, but it was sure felt like it on the floor. One of the questions, and I wish I could go back and ask it at the time, is what are we trying to accomplish? You know, what is it you're expecting this tool to do? Or this activity to do, or why are we learning this now versus other things? What is it? What is the objective here? Is it just to learn all these different tools? That's really nice. I mean, in hindsight, I learned a ton from this organization because every month we're in a different training program. You know, I learned all kinds of stuff, and we use bits and pieces here and there, but we never really implemented very much of it.
And I think that's the problem. Well, it created a wide range of knowledge, you never actually got to become competent, I may say loosely, in a specific tool or methodology, because by the time you're just starting to get the swing of it, just starting to understand and applying it, you're switching to something else.
Mm-hmm. And so I learned eventually that if somebody says, oh, we need to, every time you walk down this aisle, you got to turn left. I'm like, why? You know, where's the value? You know, how's this connect to the business objectives? Because I heard it enough times in reverse, is I would put together an idea for a plan, like we talked about last episode. And they say, why are you doing this? And as I learned that I had to connect it to the business objectives. Well, this will help us reduce costs. So this will help us in throughput. This will help us with this. And I don't know exactly how much, but I think it's in the right direction, and we'll adjust as we go on and you know, find other opportunities if we need to. And that got a lot more traction. But I think it goes the other way, is you need to use this new tool. Here, go do thermal imaging on everything. Okay. How is this connected to what we're trying to do in the plant? You know, or what objective is this connected to? I think those are fair questions, although you have to be probably more tactful than I ever was to do it. You know, but it was one of my very first experiences when I had been a shift supervisor and a manufacturing engineer for a number of years, and I moved into R&D, and one of my first assignments, the director of engineering walked in and said, here's a new product we're developing. I want you to figure out how long it will last. And so at that point, my gap was, I didn't even know to look for any information on accelerated testing because I didn't know that existed. And so I learned a ton and learned about accelerated testing and went and did all this work. And one of the questions, and my boss saw that I was diving into the deep end of learning all this stuff. And he goes, now, by the way, I need an answer in 4 months. You know, it's like, oh, okay. I guess I can't go to, you know, I was going to take this class at this university for the next 6 months to learn this. He goes, No. You need to get samples in the oven like next week. Yeah. Oh, okay. So I learned, when you pick up a task, when you're, you know, here's things we want you to do, is like, I've learned that you then ask, well, who needs this information by when, and how detailed does it need to be? And how important is this decision? And then if I can, I'll go talk to that person that's going to use this information. And in this particular case, it was the sales engineer that was working with the customer, and the customer is directly saying, we need evidence that it'll last long enough for our application. And so we were able to go back and forth with those guys. They were really terrified of letting an engineer talk to a customer, so I never got to talk to them. But I was asking questions. Well, I mean, how detailed do you need it? And it ended up working out, is that it guided me to get, instead of just a demonstration test and a simple thing, was like, they said, no, we want to understand how it's going to fail, and that your test is related to that failure mechanism. So it got down into the details and into the chemical reactions involved and stuff like that. I learned so much, and it was a fascinating process, but it was really only guided on when do you need this and to what degree does it need to be solved? And, you know, then I started asking for budget and stuff like that, and the conversation quickly ended.
But I think that's the biggest thing right there. I think you nailed it. You need to understand what it is we're trying to solve. Mm-hmm. What is the problem statement? If I don't have a good problem statement, I'm going to not give you a good answer, because I might be going in this direction or that direction. And I think, you know, as reliability people, we have to understand what is the problem we're trying to solve. That's going to dictate the level of detail, the level of effort, the budget to do so, all those different things.
Yeah, exactly. And one of those classes I took back in that organization, that plant, was there was a number of mistakes. You know, I'll use passive tense. Mistakes were made. You know, engineers went off and did some cool work, and then they came back and they said, that's not what I wanted. And so our CEO or plant manager brought in a consultant to teach us how to make a complete request. And it was like an hour lecture type thing. And I still remember it. It's how do you make a complete request so you avoid any uncertainty? And there was still plenty of uncertainty, but it reduced it quite a bit. And it was, there was five elements. Let's see if I can remember them. It's like, who's making the request? Want you, James, who's receiving the request to do X, you know, do an FMEA by Tuesday, you know, on this system, or to this level of accuracy, or to this precision, or some measurable criteria of the outcome. But it's the requester, the requestee, the task, the timeline, and the quality of it. It was basically the five elements of it. And, you know, a lot of our conversations and emails became very stilted at that point. And instead of saying, all right, team, we need to do something. And they all looked at each other going, well, which we are you talking to? You know, so he says, I want you to, you know, yeah. We'd be very formalistic, but it stuck with you, right? And I found that it's been a very useful thing as you go through is if somebody says, hey, Fred, go figure out, you know, what's our failure rate on the floor for this equipment? Well, which piece of equipment, you know, where's the boundaries of that? Do I count the conveyor belts or not in this? Or are you looking for it? What is the purpose of this? Do you want a Weibull plot or are you forecasting this? Or are you checking to see if it's better than it was last year or setting a baseline? What are you trying to, what's the underlying question that you're trying to address by getting this information? And then I can help you answer. And that goes right straight to your problem statement idea.
Yeah. And once we understand that, then we can put the good or proper answers in place, right? Or we can at least provide the right information so whoever the decision maker is can make that informed decision.
Yeah. And I don't know. One of the things I learned in consulting is oftentimes the presenting question, the first question you get from a client, now I'm shifting to our consulting work. The first question you get from a customer or a client is often not the question they need answered. You know,
it's yes.
Right? You've run into that, right?
Yep. And part of what we do is we just got to keep asking questions till we understand what the actual problem is they're trying to solve.
Right.
You know, so a lot of clients say we need to fix maintenance. Okay. Why? Well, there's a lot of breakdowns. Okay.
So your maintenance team is out there breaking things? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. So then you start diving into it, and it really all it has to do with capacity. They need more capacity without installing lines, or they have the capacity, but they got to reduce maintenance costs or whatever it is, right? You can start to understand what it is, and then we can formulate the appropriate plan. But yeah, you're 100% right. You just got to keep digging until we get the true what is the end goal here.
But that applies in the factory or in the development team is. Somebody says, hey, we need to do this. And it's might be more tactful than go, why? It's like, so who needs this information by when? Or what's the objective here that this fits into? Or, you know, what's behind this? What's driving this request? And sometimes some folks actually give you a nice detailed, here's the lay and here's how it ties into business or customer objectives. And sometimes it's just like, oh, go do the regulation testing for this thing. And I had a client the other day ask for that. And he says, well, why do you want that? And he says, well, we think it might be a good idea. It's like, <"All> right. Are you going to be in that market? Do you even, you know, need that application? And I'm like, okay, let's not do that. Let's go do other things that are more useful.
Yep. Yeah. The one I get all the time is we need a new CMMS.
Oh,
well, why?
Yeah.
Well, we're not getting the results we want for maintenance. Do you guys have a documented process for how you do any of this stuff? No, that's all in the CMMS. That's why you have the CMMS. It just, the CMMS is wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. No, so you don't need a CMMS. What you need is some, you know, business processes and some racy charts is what you really need.
That's right. let's do that tomorrow at lunch.
You know? CMMS.
Yeah. Can you imagine how much money spent on just, you know, the revolving door of different software packages, and not to pick on CMMSs, but just any of them. And it's
odd.
We're going to implement this software, and why? Now, I made that argument in the opposite side, is that my boss said, well, you can use Excel to do that. I says, yeah, technically, but I'd have to become a super user and program this thing to do it. How about if I get Weibull plus plus and just whip them out real quick and save time doing it? And, you know, and he says, well, you can do that in Excel. And I was like, right. And it, do you
is
want
it
me
worth
to
sp- my time?
Exactly. I went down to the, you know, here's my hourly rate, loaded weight for doing these things. And if you want me to spend 2 hours per plot versus 10 seconds, then you do the math, you know, kind of thing. Okay. Okay. You can get the software.
Yep.
Yeah. No, so it's, I think the bottom line of this whole topic is that we get requests, we get questions that come up, and we pose questions and we pose things like that. But underlying those things is usually somebody has to make a decision, and connecting the answering the question to what is needed for that decision maker to make a better decision is a key wherever you are. And I think it's beyond just reliability engineering, but it helps us to, and any action we take is that it has a much higher chance of adding value, of actually being useful to the organization. And that's a good thing for everybody. And so I think that's the summary of what we've been talking about here.
Yeah, I think so. You know, understand the problem, make sure we understand what we're trying to solve, line it up with what we're doing from an organizational perspective, and provide the right information. If you make assumptions, let everyone know you made an assumption. Yeah. And then go from there.
That's right. Yeah, there's a saying there about assumptions. But So anyway, if you know, if this makes sense to you, you're listening to this and you have some questions for us about how to implement it or some of the nuances or maybe your particular case, let us know. Please join the conversation. And we certainly enjoy it when you do. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a contact form there and you can get a hold of us. You can find James and I and the rest of the co-hosts on the show on LinkedIn and or on the About pages on Ascendo. So we try to be available to you to answer questions. And a good time, those good amount of times, those questions spark a discussion on the show. So we not only help you answer your question, but we try to share that knowledge and the thought process behind it with the audience and with a wider group. So we look forward to hearing from you. So, James, I think our decision now is about when should we end this episode?
I think now sounds like an appropriate time.
That's right. Thanks, James. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.